Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bavakama Daf Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the top line of Daf Vav. Before we begin the actual shiur, we glance at the side where we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading. Nosei, the topic heading, Mivneh, a structural note. We feature our markings. A diamond appears, and emphasis on a squiggle underline. These represent deis, different opinions. You might want to also note that they're numbered so that the numbering scheme continues till Amud Beis, where you'll see we reach number 4. So we have 4 opinions, Alma Bo Hamishpat Hatzad Hasheva Shebahen, in our Mishnah. After listing the different Ovois Nezikin and their contrasting elements, the Mishnah concludes with a general statement concerning the common denominator, where the Mishnah says that the common denominator is Darkon Lahazik Umamoincha Ushmirosin Alecha, that they are prone to imposing damage. They are your property, and you are obligated to watch, to supervise them. That applies to the shore, to the ox, to the fire, to the mave, whatever that is. You have a machlokis about that, but they are all darkon lahazik. They're prone to cause damage, and they are your possession, and you have to supervise them. That phrase seems to include not only the items mentioned explicitly in the Mishnah, but other things as well. So our question is, what are those other things? And hence our note continues by saying, what is it that Tzad HaShaveh is coming l'rabois to include? Klomar, derech Tzad HaShaveh, through this description of a common denominator, yesh l'rabois oy dugmois shel mazikin. It appears that there are other examples of things that cause damage that will result in the owner's obligation to provide restitution. Let us do what we always recommend with Gemara markings, and that is the bird's eye view. Scan the Gemara. Do you notice the diamonds? We pointed out that they're numbered, so you scan ahead. Abaye appears as number 1, and the squiggle underline introduces Lasuya, means to include, and what follows right after that is what Abaye is attempting to include in the Mishnah. In other words, the Mishnah includes the case of Avno Sakin Maso Shenicha Barosh Hagagoy V'Naflu Baruch Mitzuya V'Ziko. That, you can see, is number 1. We didn't explain it. We'll wait for the Gemara. Number 2, Rava, he comes to include Bar HaMisgagel, etc. Number 3, Rav Acha Bar Ava, he comes to include that which is featured in a particular Tanaic source. We'll wait till we get there to see what he is referring to. And finally, at the top of Omid Beis, the second line from the top, you see Ravina says it comes to include that which is taught in the source that he cites. That's a very general overview of the Gemara. In addition to that particular marking, you'll see the use of triangles. The triangles are explained Shlavei Birur, Bechol Dea, stages of clarification within each opinion, within Abaye, within Rava, within Ravada, etc. We are going to try to clarify what is being included. We want to just point out something here, a worth noting, shininu es the triangle. We changed the look of the triangle. Shelo yira kiretzif echot shel sidra. So that in Rome, in number one, you have a standard looking triangle. In number two, you have a triangle with a colored in tip. So you already understand that they are not an absolute continuation of what was in number one, but rather it's a re-clarification as to what number two is coming to include. And then when you get to number three, we revert to the original kind of triangle, so that, again, we create this distinction. In number four, we also have triangles, but once you turn the page to Omid Beis, you don't confuse those with the ones that you saw on Omid Aleph. But very simply stated, there's stages in trying to figure out what is being spoken of in each case. There will be the use of a dashed underline, and if you skim ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice that that highlights the expressions hainu esh or bor. And on our note, we've written hainu dechias hatzor. At that point, the Gemara rejects whatever the suggestion had been. Lomar she'eino nilmad mikoch tzadash. Over the point in the Gemara where you see that dashed underline is that whatever was suggested is not derived through a tzad hashaveh, through a common denominator, elo dehu mamish oisav. Rather, whatever was described up till that point is an actual extension of the av itself, of the primary damage force, without resorting to a common denominator between several damaging forces. A double underline will be used to highlight the expressions id afkarinu or dolo afkarinu. We'll be trying to understand, is the item mentioned something declared unowned, or the owner retains ownership of it? These markings, as is the case throughout Gemara markings, highlight the symmetry of the respective sections within a particular sugya. So you see this recurring style at each stage: stage one, stage two, stage three, which makes it much easier to navigate in the Gemara while focusing on content and not being distracted by the structure. And we have another marking in this particular sugya. The dashed underline highlights the expression velo domi labor kol dea mare besoif shatso shelo loy doime mamish labor elolim nilmedis mitzad hashoveh. Each suggestion will show how my suggestion is not exactly like bor, and therefore I will need the tzad hashoveh in order to conclude what I am suggesting. And the crown shape highlights the repeating appearance of the expression v'chozer hadin. That's the expression, the revolving logic. Siyum kol echad me'agishois loimar. Each time you see that expression, it's the end of each one of the suggestions, telling us shatso nilmedes mitzad hashoveh, that their respective suggestions are in fact learned from the tzad hashoveh, from the common denominator. Now, I hope the sugya has been mapped out to a certain degree. These markings will become much clearer as we go through the Gemara itself, as is usually the case. We now turn to the Gemara, the top line, quote from the Mishnah, Hatzad HaShoveh Shebahen. The Mishnah went on to say that the common denominator amongst the various Nezikin mentioned, that Shedarkon Lahazik U'Mamoincho Shemiroson Alecho, those are the words from the Mishnah, that their characteristic is one of being prone to cause damage. The Ovos Nezikin are your possession, they're your money, and hence your responsibility to supervise them. The Gemara asks La Suyemai, this expression of Hatzala Sheva Shebehen, etc., is coming to include what? Because by saying that in the Mishnah, we are suggesting that anything that has those characteristics causes liability upon the owner in the event of damage. So what else is being included? After all, the Mishnah stated specific examples in an explicit form. Why then this expression? What are we gaining by it? So Omar Abaye, Lasuye, we are coming to include the case of Avno Sakino Maso, a person's stone, knife, or package, Shenichon Barosh Gagoy, that he left at the top of a roof, on a rooftop, Venoflu Baruach Mitsuya Veziko. And in the event that a normal wind blew, they fell off. He left them, as you can well imagine, close to the edge of the roof, that a normal wind would be sufficient to knock them off, and they caused damage. Hechi domi. What are the circumstances of this that require the tzan hashaveh, the noting of a common denominator between the previous Avos Nezikin in order to derive this case? In other words, or in simpler terms, this case, if Abaye is saying, is being included by the term Hatzara Shova, it doesn't parallel in an exact fashion any one of the Avos Nezikin, the primary forms of damage. Only through noting the common denominator between the different forms can we then include this case. So what are the circumstances? And this will be the theme of all of the suggestions as we go through all four suggestions. So what are the circumstances that we need to resort to a gzeira shava? The triangles, as we said before, stages of analysis. If while in flight they cause damage, the wind blew, they're falling off the roof, and it causes damage while in flight, hainu eish, then that would be an extension of eish. Eish literally is fire, but as we've mentioned so many times since the beginning of this Masechta, that a major travesty of learning in general and specific to Bava Kamma is the literal translation syndrome. Here you can see a perfect example of that. We're classifying a flying rock as Eish, as fire. Well, it's not fire, it's a flying rock. But it has the same characteristics of fire in its reeking of damage, and hence we classify them as one in the same. My, and here the Gemara explains the point. My shno eish dekoyach achim urav bo. What is unique about fire in its ability to damage? And it is because there's another force behind it, that is wind. In other words, I can light a fire. If I were to light a fire in my property in a vacuum or in a windless situation, maybe vacuum is overstating it, but in a totally wind absent environment, the fire would just remain where it is. It wouldn't cause any damage. So fire, in order to cause damage, requires koyach acher, an additional force that is involved, murov, involved within the wind. What else is characteristic about fire? Umamoncha. It is your possession. It's the fire that you made. Ushmirasoi alecha. And you are obligated to supervise it. Well then, hani nami, regarding stones or knives or packages that cause damage in flight, the wind was necessary. Umamoncha shmirasoi alecha. And it's your possession and you're obligated to supervise it. You don't leave it at the edge of a roof with the ability of a simple normal velocity wind to knock them off. So that can't be the case that Abaye was referring to. V'elo boser denaychi, as opposed to the suggestion that they did damage while in flight, rather here we're suggesting they did damage after they landed. Well, so you have a package or a stone or a knife in a thoroughfare, and someone trips over it, an animal trips over it, and damage results. Well, idafkarinu, if they were declared unowned, bein l'rav, bein l'shmuel, hainu bor. We're not going to focus on the machlokis Rav and Shmuel, but they appear later in the Masechta. In this particular case, whether you hold like Rav or Shmuel regarding the rules of Bor, they will conclude here that this is exactly a case of Bor. No need for a tzad hashavah, for a common denominator between this and other mazikin. And the Gemara explains, "My shno bor shekain tchilas asiyosoi lenezek umamoincha ushmiroson olecha." What characterizes bor in that? As soon as it is made, it's already prone to causing damage. So too, we'll say the so too in a moment. But the description of bor is, as we said, the beginning of its creation is already with an element of danger in it, danger of causing damage, and it's your property. It is something that you're obligated to supervise. Hani nami, these two, tchilas asiyoson lenezek, umamoncha ushmiroson alecha. The packages and the knife and the stone are likewise possessing the same characteristics as formal bor. Elo delo afkarinu. Rather, it must be that he did not declare them unowned. Well, that too is not a sufficient description. L'shmuel diomar kulom miboro lomadnu hainu bor. This again is a Gemara that's very terse. It's making reference to that machlokis between Rav and Shmuel in the third perek of this Masechta. But suffice it to say, if you're speaking about a case where they fell groundward, lay there, and afterwards caused damage, and you did not declare them unowned, according to Shmuel, they are a direct derivative of the Torah's obligation for compensation in the case of damage done by bor, not a derivative of a tzad hashov, of a common denominator. So we have to rule that out as well. The Gemara comes back and says, Li'oilim dafkarinu. We're reverting back to what we suggested a few lines up. That he was mafkir it, velo domu labor. And at this point, as we indicated before, this dashed underline is the point at which the Gemara hones in on the need for the gezeirah shava. These items under these circumstances are not exactly like bor. Ma labor shekein ein koyach acher meurav bo. Tomar Bahani Shikoyach Achim Urof Bohen. How can you describe these as being like bor when bor damages without the intervention of another force? These cause damage only because of the presence of an outside force, namely the wind. Ah, so you're saying they cause damage because of the intervention or the involvement of an outside force? Well, Eish Tochiach, let Eish prove the liability caused by these items. Once again, what do you need a tzad hashoveh for? No, ma le'esh, I can't parallel these to esh. Shekein darkei leilech ulahazik. Fire damages while in movement. These don't move. These are static. And only as such do they cause damage as is distinct from fire. All right, so you're telling me there's static bor tochiach. So then let bor, let the case of the pit, prove that there is damage for that which does its damage while static. What do I need the tzad hashavah for? The answer once again is, like we saw before, we start to revolve in our logic at this point, because if you're going to say, well, let us rely on bor, we will tell you that bor does damage without a kliach achem uruv boy, without an external or additional force. These do damage only because of the presence of an additional force. The chozar hadin. And that's the clue to the need for a gezerah, for a tzad hashoveh, common denominator between bor and eish, will result in the case of avnus sakinu maso shenicham b'rosh gagoy v'nafle baruch metzuya v'ziko, as we said, even in a case where he had been mafkir it, declared them unowned, nevertheless the owner is held responsible. Rava Omar, Lasuye, Rava says that the expression of the Mishnah la'atzad ha'shova shebohen shedarkon la'azik u'moyin chushmur sanalecho is coming to include bor ha'mizgalgel b'ragle odom u'b'ragle behemo. Here again we have the danger of literal translation, because if you translate this literally, you'll come to something that would be from, we'll say, cartoons or wild imagination, and that is the mobile pit, the rolling pit. Well, of course, we don't translate literally, but we look at the characteristics of pit, and we come up with this suggestion of Rava. What is a bor hamisgalgel b'ragle on the ragle behemo? So we take a look at Rashi. Just a couple lines down from here. Bor hamisgal, boro hamisgal, kagon hiniach evin b'shus harabim. A person set down in a public thoroughfare a stone, uba'oide b'mekayim alo hiziko, and where you placed it down, no damage resulted. V'gilgil ragle odom u'behemo l'moki macher v'ziko sham. And the movement of people and animals in the public thoroughfare repositioned, relocated this item. It rolled to some other location and caused damage there. Hence you have the description of the rolling pit, the stone causing damage, similar to the way a pit causes damage, stumbling over it, stumbling into it. And in this particular case, it caused damage in a place other than where the original party placed it down. So Rava says the original owner of that item is going to be held responsible for damage it causes, even though the damage resulted in a different location. Now the Gemara continues. Hey Chidomi, once again, what are the circumstances? If he had declared it unknown, bein the Rav, bein the Shmuel, hainu bor, it would be the same as a bor, maishna bor, shekein tchilos asi asai lenezek, its initial creation is one that is prone to causing damage, ushmirosai olecha, and you're obligated to watch it. Hani nami tchilas asi asai lenezek, ushmirosan olecha. These two are items that as soon as you placed them down, they are prone to causing damage, and you have to supervise it. Ella, so and as we indicated before, you wouldn't need a gezerah shava, a tzad hashavah for that. Ella, the law afkirinu. Well, he didn't declare it an unknown. Well, then l'Shmuel, the Amar kulo miboro lo matnu hainu bor. According to Shmuel, that says all kinds of damaging forces are derived from bor. Again, we're just translating, but the details of Shmuel we have to wait for in the third perek. But Shmuel nevertheless says that we derive in cases of items that were not declared unknown but caused damage, they are derived from bor, and then hainu bor. This again would be an exact replica or a tolda of bor itself. No need for a tzad hashoveh to prove that the Boram is Galgel is going to hold the owner culpable. Li'oilam da'afkirinu. So we say, we go back to the first approach, that means the first double underline in this section, where the owner did declare them unowned. And yet, v'lodomi labor. They're not parallel exactly to Bor. And what did this dash underline indicate? We really need the tzad hashoveh to include it. Well, why? Ma labor shekein maisov garmulo. In the case of a pit that causes damage, it's your own digging of the pit that caused the pit to be a source of damage. In the case of the Bor HaMisgalgel, you placed it down in the Rishus HaRabim at a particular point. It did no damage over there. Your actions did not cause the damage, or your actions are not immediately or directly responsible for the damage. Rather, it was the movement of people and animals that relocated the item. Well, all right, Shor Yochiach, let Shor then prove the culpability of the Bor HaMisgalgel. A Shor, an animal that gores, the owner did not make the animal. It's an item that you own that caused damage, but it's not it's not the same level of connection that exists in the case of a pit that you dug out. And yet we know that in the case of a damaging animal, it's your possession, and hence that's enough reason for causing you, the owner, to be responsible. Same thing with the Bor HaMisgalgel. So why do I need a tzad hashoveh? Ma leshor. No, I can't compare our case of the Bor HaMisgalgel to the shor. Shekein darku leilechu lahazik. The animal's nature is to go, to move. It has its own locomotion to go elsewhere and wreak damage. Not so in the case of an item, a package you place down at a particular point. It doesn't have that characteristic of internal locomotion and with the propensity for damage. Bor tochiach. Well, then let the case of the pit prove our situation. Ah, but we said pit alone, bor alone is not enough. Because in the case of the bor, its damage is a direct result of your actions. Not so in the case of the item that was kicked to another location. V'chozar hadin. And the logic revolves. Lo ro'izeh ki ro'izeh. The bor is not like this. The shor is not like this. And but through the common denominator, we tell you that this too, the case of Bor HaMisgalgel, results in the owner being chayev. And again, you can see the crown marking is here to highlight that we need the tzad hashoveh. Revolving logic forces us into a position where we have to seek the common denominator between the various previous mentioned elements in order to derive liability in a case like this. Rav Ado bar Ahava Omar la suye ha desanya. The Mishnah's expression of Atzara Shavash Ben is coming to include the description of that which you find in the following Tanaic source. So that our Mishnah is alluding to this scenario. This Tanaic source describes a person releasing from his domain sewage and the like. Cleaning out his property, and the sewage and the debris land in a public thoroughfare. The source will tell us that depending on the season, during the summer season when everything is nice and dry and pleasant, you have no right to you have no initial right to open the stopper or the plug in from your yard, your domain, and allow this to flow out. However, in the winter season, obviously this source is describing very specific environmental circumstances, that in the winter season, at a time when unpaved, assuming that paved roads and byways were not common or non-existent, so what you had were dirt paths in the winter rainy season. They become muddy themselves and lacking any form of pleasantness. So at that time, the source tells us you have the legal right to open the plugs of your property and allow sewage and debris to flow out into the public thoroughfare. Even though you have a legal right to do so in terms of, let's say, environmental and issues of city beautification concerns, you have a right to do this in the winter season. Nevertheless, any damage that results from your debris will hold you, the owner, responsible. And hence hold you liable for any damage. This phenomenon is derived through the tzad hashoveh, the common denominator of our avos nezikin in the Mishnah. How do we prove that? How do we demonstrate that? So, of course, we go on with number three. Ravado barava omar lasuye hadesanya. The tzad hashoveh mentioned in the Mishnah is coming to include this. Kol elu shamru poiskin biboisein v'gorfin morosein. All those that it was said they can open their sewage lines and scrape out their caves, literally their caves. These were places that one would store their debris. B'moisa chamo ein lem reshus, during the summer season they have no right to do that. B'moisa cha agshamim yesh lohem reshus, during the rainy season when all of the byways are muddy, the individual homeowners can do this, can poiskim bibusam, and vafopi shebirushus, even though you've done so with permission, im heziku chayovim l'shalim, if your debris caused damage, someone or someone's animals slipped on it and became injured, or vessels broke, or the like, damage that results, so you are liable. Hechi domi, what are the circumstances? Iba hadi de koazli maski, if while your debris is flowing out into the public domain, damage is caused. Hechi hu, that's your own force. That Rashi describes as that's a person himself doing damage. One can easily understand this, that if a person, let us say, threw an item and smashed someone's article, we say that's a person that caused the damage, even though there wasn't any bodily contact between the baseball that you threw through the neighbor's living room window. Nevertheless, you are said to be Adam HaMazik. That's a person causing damage. And the kocho, that which comes through your force, is considered you. So if you are opening up the plug that prevented the garbage from reaching the public, and now you are releasing it, and while it's flowing out through your releasing it, damage is caused. That's called Adam HaMazik. In other words, you don't need a tzad hashaveh to come to the conclusion of liability. Ella, the boser denayach. Rather, the damage must have resulted after it came to a standstill. Hechi domi, What are the circumstances? Idaf Garinu, if he had declared it unowned, Bein the Rav, Bein the Shmuel, Hainu Bor, this would be then the same as Bor. Maishna Bor, the Tchilas Asiyosu LeNezek, its initial creation is one that is prone to cause damage. Umamoin Chushmer Solecho, Haninami, these two, the garbage that you deposit in a public thoroughfare, Tchilas Asiyosan LeNezek, Umamoin Chushmer Solecho. Elo de lo afkirinu. It must be that he did not declare it unknown. Well, that's rejected though as well. We don't need a tzad hashoveh for this. L'shmuel demar kulam iboru lamadnu hainu bor. According to Shmuel, this would again be an extension of bor. No conclusion as a result of a tzad hashoveh, of a common denominator between Bor and other entities. This is a direct example of Bor. Le'olam dafkarinu. He did declare it unowned. Velo domi labor. However, this is not the same as Bor. Ma labor shekein shelo b'shus. A person digging a pit in a public thoroughfare has done something that he has no right to do. Toimar ba'ani. Releasing of garbage during the winter rainy season is something that you had court approval of doing. And therefore, if I were to be left with Bor alone, I wouldn't know that there's liability for this, something that you had court approval of creating. We continue at the top of Amud Beis. Shor Yochiach, the case of an animal causing damage will prove directly the case of the released garbage. How's that? Because a shor, you walk your animal through a public thoroughfare. Do you have a right to do that? Certainly yes. If the animal does damage while you're walking it through a public thoroughfare, let us say it gores, does something unusual while and causes damage, you are chayav, even though, you know, you are liable for the damage your animal caused, even though your presence, or specifically the animal's presence, was with court approval. So, do you need a tzad hashoveh? Yes. Ma l'shor shekein darka leilichu l'hazik. Shor is different. The shor, the animal's tendency, its nature is to move along and cause damage. This is an inanimate collection of garbage that's come to a standstill. It's not darko leilechu l'hazik. It doesn't have that animal characteristic. So maybe this would not be chayav. Wouldn't carry with it any liability. Well, we answer Bor Tochiach. Here's an example of something where there is liability, even though it's not dark leilechu l'hazik, it's static. V'chozar hadin, and as we indicated before, if you were going to rely simply on Bor, we saw that would not be sufficient because that's something you had no right to create. Here you have a right to release your garbage in the rainy season. So the logic revolves, and through a tzad hashaveh, through a common denominator between shor and bor, I can derive that the released garbage creates liability upon the owner. Ravina Omar, La Suye Ha Disnan. The tzad hashoveh of the Mishnah was coming to include the circumstances featured in this Tanaic source. A wall, a tree that fell into a public thoroughfare and caused damage. Potter milishalim, there is exemption from liability. Nosnu lo zman lokus esilim velistor esakisov enaflu. If, however, the authorities dictated a time frame within which he shall cut down the tree. Apparently you have a tree that was threatening the public with danger, with the possibility of damage, and a wall that was architecturally unsound. So the authorities dictated a time frame within which to remove them. So we continue here. Let's read that phrase again. Nosu lo zman, they legislated a time frame. Lokut hazin, to cut down the tree. V'listor es ha-kosel, to knock down the wall. V'noflu. And he didn't remove them. They rather fell and caused damage. B'soy chazman v'zikoy, potter. If within the time frame, they said you have 2 weeks to remove it. After 1 week, the tree fell or the wall fell and caused damage, the owner is exempt. Li'achar hazman, if he delayed the removal he procrastinated in removing these items and the time lapsed and they caused damage, chayav, the owner is liable. Hechi domi, e da afkira bein l'rav bein l'shmuel haynu bor. This would be the same as a case of bor. Just like a bor, it's hezeko motzi. Motzi means it's common. It's prone to causing damage. Rashi says on the third line from the top, it's normal, it's common for animals to fall into pits that are in a public thoroughfare. So, two over here. These are prone to causing damage. This the shaky wall or the precarious growing tree. So, just like a boar is hezeko motzi, hani nami hezeko motzi shmirosan alecha, ida lo afkirinu. Well, the Shmuel derma kulam ibor lo mabnu hainu bor. Once again, this is a direct example of bor. I don't need a tzan hashoveh. Yoilom dafkirinu, velo domi labor. It's not similar to bor. Ma lebor shekain tchilas asiyosoi lenezek. The pit, as soon as you started digging it out, it was already prone to causing damage. Toimar ba'ani, can you say the same thing about the wall and the tree? Shekain tchilas asiyosoi lenezek. The building of the wall originally and the planting of the tree were not with a propensity toward damage in the course of time. So the foundation of the wall became eroded and the tree fell victim to environmental torments and hence became threat to the public, but we can't say as soon as they came into existence they were already sources of damage. Well, shor yochiach, let the case of the animal prove the kosel v'ilan shenaflu. The animal, of course, when it came into existence, when it was born or what have you, it wasn't a source of damage. And yet, a person is held responsible for damage that results from the shor. So let me derive the case of Kosel Ilan Shenaflu from the shor. Do I need a common denominator? Ma le shor shekein darko lele chulahazik. Yes, I cannot learn the Kosel Ilan from the shor. The shor has locomotion. Its tendency is to move from place to place and cause damage. Not so in the case of the Kosel Ilan Shenaflu. Bor tochiach, bor is static, and yet the owner is responsible. But again, the Chazar Hadin, the logic will revolve, and only as a result of a common denominator between shor and bor can I derive the liability for the upon the owner of the Kosel Ilan Shenaflu Lushus Arabim. So if you want to just scan over the Gemara, you can see very quickly, especially with the markings, four suggestions as to what Hatzad Hashoveh Shebohen of the Mishnah is coming to include. The Mishnah said, Kishihizik Chav Hamazik, when damage results, the perpetrator, the owner, is obligated to compensate. The Gemara asks a question concerning language. Chav hamazik? Chayov hamazik mi boyale. What's the explanation of this unusual word, chav? The more common expression, the more reasonable or sensible expression would have been chayov hamazik. The mazik, the damager, is liable. What does chav mean? Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav. Hai Tana Yerushalmi Hu. The author of our Mishnah is from Israel. Detoni Lishna Klila. Yerushalmi literally is Jerusalem. However, it might be a reference to someone from the land of Israel as opposed to other locations, and their style was to teach Lishna Klila. Lishna Klila, literally a light language, but it might be more accurately translated as they speak in a terse form, so that whereas we would say Chayov, they would use the abbreviated form and saying Chav. L'shalem tashlume nezek b'meitav ha'oretz. When damage results, so then compensation must be made from meitav ha'oretz. The Gemara now spends a significant amount of time on analyzing what is meant by payment b'meitav ha'oretz, literally from the choice of the land. I think it's reasonable to assume that when one is liable to compensate for damage, one would pay out of pocket with cash. And that certainly is what one ought to assume. What happens in cases when the damager doesn't have ready cash? Well, he can pay in cash equivalent. We'll see more about that in the Gemara. But for the time being, the cash equivalent that we'll be focusing on is land, paying in terms of land. Tonu Rabbonon, Meitav Sodeu u'Meitav Karmoi Yishalem. That is the Pasuk, and the first opinion in this source, the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, understands Meitav Sodeu Shel Nizak U'Meitav Karmoi Shel Nizak Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. When compensation is made, it's made from the best of the victim's property, meaning in accordance with the value of the best of the victim's properties. That might sound a bit convoluted, a bit vague. In fact, as we go through the Gemara, we will attempt to achieve clarity on what this is. Understandably, at this point, it's not clear yet. We glance at Rashi, in the upper part of the narrow lines, Meitav Sodeu Shel Nizak, Shimochla Aruga B'Sodeu. If the damaging animal ate a row of vegetation in the victim's field, Shomen Aruga Mishubachas Shel Nizak Kama Yofe Achshav in Peirosel V'Kama Te Yofe B'Loi Peiros V'Noisein Lo. We will evaluate the value of a row of high-quality fruits or vegetables growing in the victim's field. How much is that row worth with the fruits, with the vegetation? And how much is it worth without the vegetation? And that difference is what would be paid. Let's continue in the source. Rabbi Akiva Oimer, Lo bo akosuv elo likvois lenezikin min ho'idis, v'kal v'choymer lehektish. Rashi, once again, understanding that whatever we say now will be subject to reevaluation as we go on in the Gemara. But Rashi now says, Lo bo akosuv elo likvois lenezikin min ho'idis. Min ho'idis means top quality property, shel mazik, of the damager. The shomen aruga shel nizik lefi ma shehi. We evaluate the value of an aruga, of a row of vegetation, of the victim as it is v'im mazik bo litein lo karka b'demei niskoi, and if the offender comes to pay with land instead of cash, noisein lo meitav sadoisav shava oisan domim, he, the mazik, will pay with top quality land in accordance with the value, the evaluation of the damage wrought to the victim. So that either payment is made in cash, if not, it's made in terms of land. In other words, the mazik, the damager, would assign title to a piece of land corresponding to that, to the value of the damage. Now, what quality land? Top quality land. Granted, in terms of acreage, in terms of area measure, it will be less. You can well imagine that a parking spot in mid-Manhattan is going to be worth the same value as many hundreds of acres in the middle of the Sahara Desert. But nevertheless, high quality land is generally speaking much more preferred by the general population. The expression at the end of the source, v'kal v'chomer b'lehegdish, will be explained by the Gemara. We continue now in the Gemara and several stages until we achieve some level of clarity. The Gemara asks, v'Rebbe Yishmael, according to Rebbe Yishmael, ochal shmeino mishalem shmeino. If the damager ate, shmeino means high quality property. So then I understand that payment must be made in kind. Ochal kusho mishalem shmeino. If the animal ate poor quality produce, does Rabbi Shmuel intend that payment shall nevertheless be made from meitav, from top quality land? The markings that you see are explained on the side under our Nosei Mivne heading. The house shape, Nisyonis Lahazbir Shitas Rabbi Shmuel, Umach Lukosoi, Im Rabbi Akiva. These are attempts to explain Rabbi Shmuel's position and the point of disagreement that he has with Rabbi Akiva. We'll be highlighting the expression, Hocha B'mayaskinon, with a double underline, as we point out the, we'll say, the symmetry in Gemara structure. So at this point, Rabbi Shmuel is not clear, because as far as it's said in the source, the mazik has to pay the nizak meitav, best quality. What does that mean? Even if poor quality was damaged, you have to pay in best quality terms. So the Gemara explains, Omar Rav Idi Bar Oven, Hocho b'mayaskinon. The source is dealing with the following circumstances. Goes she'ochal aruga beino arugais. The animal damaged one of several rows, and amongst those rows of vegetation, there was high quality stuff, and there was poor quality stuff, and we don't know which row this particular animal eight. And the mishalem shmeino, as a result of our ignorance of the facts, so the owner of the damaging animal is expected to pay in terms of shmeino, top quality restitution. The Gemara now presents a question that lasts a few lines. Omar Rova. Rava says, I don't understand Rav Edi's approach. Uma ilu yadinon de kusha ochal. If we knew for sure that kusha, poor quality, was consumed by the animal, lo mishalem elo kusha, then payment would be made corresponding to the poor quality that was damaged. Hashta de lo yad inon ikusha ochal ishmeno ochal mishalem shmeno. Now that we don't know whether the animal ate kusha or an animal ate shmeno, the damager is expected to compensate in terms of top quality. Do we not have a rule, hamoitzi mechavero olav haraya, that one who is trying to extract payment, in this case the victim is trying to extract payment, upon him is the burden of proof to prove that his top quality stuff was ruined. So how could it possibly be, as Rav Edi says, that Rabbi Shmuel's position of paying top quality is when we don't know what this particular animal had damaged? Elo Omar Rav Acha Bar Yankiv. Hochaba Mayaskinon. The circumstances are as follows. The circumstances of the Machlokis, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva are as follows. Kagon Choisa Idis Denizak Kaziburis Demazik. These two parties, the offender and the victim, they have different qualities of land. The nizak, the victim, has as his top quality land the same that corresponds to the offender's, to the mazik's ziburis, poorest quality land. Ubaha pligi. And the Machlokis, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, is as follows. Rabbi Shmuel Sovar, B'denizak Shaiminon. Rabbi Shmuel says that the Mazik, when he has to pay, and if he chooses to pay back in land, the Torah says pay top quality. But who's top quality? Rabbi Shmuel says the Mazik will pay in terms of the victim's top quality. In this particular case, the offender's poorest quality land corresponds to the victim's top quality. So Rabbi Shmuel represents a leniency for the offender. He's able to pay off his debt that resulted from the damage he caused through Ziburis, through his own Ziburis. Why? Because the offender's own ziburis corresponds to the top quality land of the victim. For Rabbi Kiva Sofar, b'demazik shamin, Rabbi Kiva holds that the mazik has to pay, has to compensate for damages he caused from his own top quality land. And the marking that you see now highlights the reasons for each one of the opinions, as we see on the side Ta'omim, the reasons show Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva, and we continue in the Gemara. My time under Rabbi Shmuel, what is the basis of Rabbi Shmuel that says that the offender can pay land as long as it corresponds to the victim's top quality, even though it's his own, the offender's own poor quality land? Nemar sode lemato v'nemar sode lemalo. There are two verses referred to here, and we're creating a word comparison. The pasuk says meitav sodeo yishalem, and the other pasuk says ubir b'sdei acher. Ma sode umur lemalo. Just like there in the pasuk says is ubir b'sdei acher. The sode referred to in that pasuk is denizak. It's the victim's field. The pasuk says, and the animal ate produce in someone's field, someone else's field. Well, the field there is the victim's field. Af soda mur lamato, so too soda in the pasuk that says meitav sodehu yishalem, that he shall pay from the best quality. It's the same soda referred to in the other pasuk, and that is de nizak. So Av Soda Omur Lemato de Nizak. Hence Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. For Rabbi Akiva says, Meitav Sodeu Meitav Karma Yishalem, Tehech Dekol Mishalem. Rabbi Akiva says, read the pasuk in its simplest, at its simplest level. And it says that from his best quality lands, payment shall be made. He shall make payment. Who is the subject of the pasuk? The one who is making the payment. The hechtiko mishalim, the one who's making the payment. Who is that? The offender, the damager, the mazik. And as Rashi says, the word comparison we call the gzeira shava that we alluded to before can't uproot the pasuk from its simple meaning. Rabbi Shmuel, now here Rabbi Shmuel is on the spot because you have a pasuk with a simple meaning that he didn't seem to acknowledge. So Rabbi Shmuel says, Ahani gzeira shava v'ahani kra. The two elements that we've mentioned, the word comparison has value, and the kra, the simple reading of the pasuk, also has value. And he explains. We mentioned we have Aleph and Beis, so we go over them. Aleph, Ahani Gzera Shava. The Gzera Shava has benefit, Ke de ko amino, as I said. Namely, the situation where the Mazik's ziburis, poor quality, is equal to the Nizak's edis, the Mazik can pay with his own ziburis. Ahani kra, the posuk has benefit in addressing a different situation. The posuk, in its simple translation, meant that the offender shall pay from his own best quality. Under what circumstances? Kagon diis le lamazik idis viziburis. The offender has two qualities of land. He has his own top quality and his own poorest quality. The idis lanizak. The nizak, the victim, also has land, is one quality land, decent, good quality land. The ziburis demazik. Lo shavio ki idis denizak. Here we have to create a scale. We have a little star on the side with it, visualized. The ziburis of the mazik, the poor quality of the mazik, is level 3. It's leveled down. It's going in descending order of quality. Poorest quality in this scheme is the ziburis's, the mazik ziburis. And as the Gemara says, the ziburis of the mazik is not equal, but rather it's worth less than the idis of the nizak. The idis of the mazik, however, is worth even more than the idis of the nizak. De mishalem le mimeitav didei. In a case like this, the mazik pays with his own Edis. The Lomotzi Omale, the Mazik cannot say Ta'at Gab Govi or Mi Ziburis. Elo Govi Mi Meitav. Here in this case he can't tell the victim, collect from my Ziburis, but rather collect from my Meitav. At this point, we have a little star to the side of the Gemara text. This helps you see where the quote is coming from. We saw this above. Rabbi Kiva Oimer lo bo akosuv elo ligvois lenezikin min hoidis v'kal v'chomer lehektish. You'll notice shortly in the Gemara a bow tie shape. On the side, under the Nosei Mivne heading, these represent Nisyonis Lahazbu Diver Bikiva Diomar Vikavachomer Lahegdish. We will try to explain, or stages or attempts to explain, what did Rabbi Akiva mean by his statement Vikavachomer Lahegdish. Now the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva Oimer, Lo bo akosuv el ligvois lenezikin minho idis Vikavachomer Lahegdish. In the meantime, it appears, as we said up till now, that there's a machlokis Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva in the case of the ziburis of the mazik equaling the edis of the nizak. And we explained Rabbi Kiva as saying that the payment is made in accordance with the simple reading of the pasuk from the offender's top quality land. In the event that he's not going to be paying cash, he'll give him a parcel of land corresponding to the value of the damage from his own choice quality land. And then Rabbi Kiva adds, "V'kal v'chomer lehekdish." What does that mean? My v'kal v'chomer lehekdish. Ilema de nogach tura di don le tura de hekdish. If you think that it's referring to a case where our common animal gored and damaged a sanctified animal, and Rabbi Kiva is saying that all the more so, payment shall be made in that case from top quality land, that can't possibly be the explanation. Shor Re'ehu Amrachmona, V'lo Shor Shel Hekdish. The pasuk speaks about someone's ox goring Shor Re'ehu, his friend's ox. Friend's ox means another commoner's ox. And from that we infer payment, restitution is made only when the victim is a common animal, to the exclusion of a case where the victim is a sanctified animal. So that from the pasuk standpoint, if a hektish animal is damaged, there's no payment. So what does kal v'chomer lehektish mean? Ella, let's try something else. Le'oimer harei olai mona lebedek abayis. A man accepts upon himself a vow to give a mona. Mona is an amount of money to the temple repair fund, the bedek abayis. So he's making a pledge to the Beis Hamikdash. The osi gizbor v'shokil meidis. What Rabbi Kiva maybe is saying, that the temple treasurer in collecting the debt, if the pledger doesn't pay a cash payment, so the gizbor collects from the pledger's top quality land. The Gemara says that can't be what Rabbi Akiva is saying. Lo yehe elo bal choiv. Let this be no different than a case of a person who has incurred a debt. Person borrowed money. He's a bal chov. He now has to pay money. I should say, a person owes money to a bal chov. A person owes money to a lender. And the Gemara continues at the top of Dav Zayin. U bal chov bebeinunis. Payment to creditors is made from middle quality land, beinonis, from the word like beinoni or bein. Bein means in between, middle quality land. So that in the scale of different land qualities, top, middle, and lowest, debts are paid off in the event that they're not paid off with cash, they're paid off with middle quality land. Vechitema sovar bikiva kol bal chov nami beidis. And if you take the position that in general, people that owe money pay from top quality land, so that the debt that you have to the Beis HaMikdash is to be paid, in fact, from top quality land. Even so, even if Rabbi Kiva had that position, the debt to Hekdish would not be the same. It wouldn't be paid with top quality land. Iko lemifrach. You could still undo this logic of kal v'chomer lehekdish with the following idea. Ma lebalchov sheken yofe koichei benezikin. Tomar behekdish shahira koichei benezikin. If you have someone that is collecting money, if you have a commoner that's collecting money, he has an understandable right to collect edis, because when he, the commoner, is damaged, he's able to collect damage fees. Should you say the same thing by the realm of Hekdesh? Why should Hekdesh as a creditor be able to collect top quality land when we just said earlier that when Hekdesh is the victim of damage, it has no collection power at all? So the realm of Hekdesh is a rather weak realm of legality, powers of collection when it comes to compensation. So what are we to make of Rabbi Akiva and his V'kal v'chomer l'hekdesh? Le'olam d'nogach turo didon l'turo d'hekdesh. We'll go back to the first approach. A common animal, gourd, a sanctified animal. And you'll ask, but the Pasuk made a distinction through inference, Shor Re'ehu, to the exclusion of Shor Shel Hekdesh, to the exclusion of a sanctified animal. So the Gemara says, yes, there is a distinction, however, not to the detriment of Hekdesh, but to the opposite extreme. The exclusion is to empower Hekdesh, as we will see shortly. Rabbi Akiva, Sovarlok, Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh. Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Shimon that the power of collection of Hekdesh in damages is greater than that of the power of a commoner. Desanya, Rabbi Shimon Asya Oimer, Shor Shel Hekdesh, Shenogach Shor Shel Hekdesh Potter. If a sanctified animal gored a common animal, the Beis Hamikdash is exempt from having to compensate. Shor Shel Hekdesh, Shenogach Shor Shel Hekdesh. If a common animal gored a sanctified animal, and here you're going to see, just like a moment ago there was a difference, here you're going to see another difference. When a common animal gores a sanctified animal, bein tam, bein muad, mishalem nezek sholem. Whether it's a docile animal or a goring type animal, and here we want to emphasize the case of the tam, the docile animal, which hasn't gored three times yet. Nevertheless, if the victim is a sanctified animal, the offender will pay. The commoner whose animal gored the sanctified animal will pay full damages. Oh, so that we see that the Pasuk, when it says Shor Re'ehu, you would understand by as follows, that when it comes to the victim who is Re'ehu, is your colleague, your equivalent, a commoner like yourself, there we have a Tam versus Muad differentiation. Not so when it comes to Shor Shel Hekdesh as the victim. There's no Tam versus Muad distinction, but rather Tam is like Muad, and he pays Nezek Sholem. So that you see the power of collection of Hekdesh is greater than that of a Hedyot. And hence, Rabbi Kiva's point was that if, when it comes to damages imposed to a fellow animal, a common animal, the payment is made from top quality mazik land, all the more so when the victim is a sanctified animal, that the offender shall pay from his top quality idis land. The Gemara asks, Ihachi, Rabbi Shmov, Rabbi Kiva, the two Tanoim that were arguing in our original source, Mimai de Beidis de Nizak Viziburis de Mazik Pligi. Who is to say that they have a disagreement in that particular case where the top quality of the Nizak was equal to the poor quality of the Mazik? At which point we had said that according to Rabbi Yishmael, the Mazik can pay from his own cheap quality land because that's the equivalent of the Nizak's best stuff. And Rabbi Kiva said, no, the Mazik must pay from his own top quality. Dilma dekule alma b'denizik shaminon. Maybe everyone agrees, meaning even Rabbi Akiva agrees with Rabbi Yishmael, that in a case like that, where you have idis denizik like the ziburis of the Mazik, that the evaluation in terms of determining whose idis is the standard of payment, but the nizak shayminon. Shayminon means we make an evaluation. We make evaluation in terms of the nizak's lands. There's no machlokas, maybe, between them on that issue. And the machlokis in our source on Davova Midbeis between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Kiva parallels the machlokis between Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya and the Rabbonon. Rabbi Kiva Savar Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya. Rabbi Kiva holds like Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya giving, empowering Hegdish with much greater powers of compensation, receipt of compensation than a commoner. Rabbi Shmuel, Savak Rabbonan, and Rabbi Shmuel holds like the Rabbonan that we indicated earlier, that if a sanctified animal is the victim, then no compensation is made. So in simple terms, maybe the machlokas, Rabbi Akiva and Rishmael, is limited to this situation. And they don't have any argument, any disagreement regarding the case of two commoners, one the offender and one the victim. The Gemara says that cannot be the explanation of the source. There are three objections to this suggestion. Imkain. If it were so that they are not arguing regarding the interpretation of the pasuk, Meitiv Sadeo, Meitiv Karma Yishalem, if that were so, then how do you explain the phrase in the source of Lo Bo Hakosuf? Rashi, you can see across from here, Im Kein Mai Lo Bo Hakosuf Dimasha Dibikro Gufei Pligi. From that expression, the word kosuv means the scripture. So from that expression that Rabbi Akiva used, lo bo kosuv ela, that indicates that Rabbi Akiva is arguing with Rabbi Shmuel in terms of interpretation of a pasuk. The lo bo kosuv lahachi, saying the pasuk is not coming to tell me like you said, but rather like I say, alma behedyo nami pligi. So we see that the disagreement between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva is on a common level as well, a machlokas beyond the realm of sanctified animals. Number two, the oid my kal v'chomer lehekdish. According to your suggestion, in the long question that we had a couple lines up, Rabbi Akiva was said to agree with Rabbi Shmuel that we're going to offer a leniency, that namely, b'de nizak shayminon, that where the top quality of the nizak equals the poor quality of the mazik can get away with it and pay with his own poor quality land. That is a leniency. When you see the expression kal v'chomer following a leniency, the kal v'chomer indicates that we're going to go in a further direction, in a more extreme direction of that which you already suggested. So that if the starting point was a leniency, and I say kal v'chomer, that means I'm going to now, regarding this second topic, I'm going to be even more lenient. Meaning, in this case, that I'm going to be even more lenient with regard to hektish. Aha! But if you're telling me that Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya, the realm of Hegdish is much more severe, is much more demanding, so that the expression kal v'chomer lehegdish would be totally inappropriate if we were to accept your suggestion that Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Shmuel in the case of Idis de Nizak Kiziburas de Mazik. Number three. V'yoid ho'oma Ravashi Tanya Behedya. Ravashi says we have an explicit Tanaic source that indicates the machlokes Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva is in fact on the pasuk, and like the case we already said, that and hence you see that the machlokes Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel is not limited to the realm of payment to Hekdesh. It says in the following source, Meitav Sadeo, Meitav Karmel Yeshalem, the same opening, by the way, as the original source on Daf Vav Amid Beis, quoting the same pasuk. But here, notice, Meitav Sadeo Shel Nizak, who Meitav Karmel Shel Nizak, Devar Rabbi Yishmael. Payment is made in terms of the victim's top quality. Rabbi Akiva Omer, and here is where we see we have real clarification. Rabbi Akiva says, Meitav Sadeo Shel Mazik, or Meitav Karmel Shel Mazik, the top quality land and the top quality vineyards of the offender, of the Mazik. So the suggestion falls on three counts, and the third being the total knockout, that we have a Tanaic source refuting the suggestion made to limit the Machlokas Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel to the realm of Hektish. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.